das Rot.
Дошла? Okay, она на тебе здесь. Если что, просто вы позовете, он принесет вам попить. Он там в уголке.
So this was based on upeksha, and that actually, in this context, dealt with challenges and the opposition. By actually having a balance between the forces against and forces for change. Technically, they're known as restraining forces and the driving forces being for, favorable forces for a change. And how was that done? That was done through actually setting up setting up PR team. PR teams, or the PR, the purpose of the PR in this context, in this context is to, and generally also to rejuvenate sour relationships between an organization and the public or any other party. And specifically, ISKCON's image amongst the public in general. This is done by setting up systems, PR systems, specifically again to safeguard ISKCON's interest in terms of legal issues, physical and intellectual property matters. The question comes, why PR? Why not any other method of achieving this? In fact, we find that PR is, in some temples, I'm sure that is not the case in your temple or zone, but I have personal experiences, that PR is always given kind of low priority, majority of the temples. Why? Because PR is a money spending department rather than money generating department. So the resistance is always there in terms of giving resources, whether it's manpower or finances, to the PR team. And we know why even Bill Gates actually approves and puts so much emphasis on the working of PR. And why ALP was actually strengthened and developed the current systems of PR in Ujjain, and also in the area of legal and property matters. Why this project, why this particular project is and was needed in Ujjain? Because Ujjain actually, those of you who have been, those of you who haven't, you will notice Ujjain is a very small place, relatively small place. Speaking to Pramatma Group, Guyana only has a population of 750,000. Ujjain itself has 500,000 population, very small city. Though it's a small city, everyone knows each other. You blink and the person on the side knows you blink. That's how small city is. And because of that, one reason is yellow journalism is practiced. Yellow journalism means journalists who have no morals, no basis, they just sensationalize news, and especially in India, yellow journalism also means paid news. So that is practiced a lot. And being a small place, we have many blackmailers in Ujjain, and their profession is to blackmail organizations, and a lot of the lawyers are involved in this because they know how to exploit the legalities and find the loopholes. In fact, one of the lawyers instigated a public interest litigation against ISKCON Ujjain a few years ago, and that caused some negative publicity, and that's why we thought it was important that this project actually comes into effect. And my specific targets for this ALP was to recruit, form a PR team, which was existing, but recruit more members, provide them training, and implement the processes of this GBC college, which we learned. But it wasn't easy. There were some difficulties involved. One of the most start of this project was delayed. It was my personal fault straight after the last residential. I was out of my base in Ujjain for about 10 weeks. So by the time I got back, this ALP got delayed, and I really couldn't get back into it as I should have. And there's a team of four members actually reduced to two. Two had left, moved on. So there's another great difficulty. And one of the other members, he was disenchanted. Wood Temple, Buddhiscon, which generally he was going through a phase, there's another difficulty. And there was other priorities. And I'm sure some of you can relate with that. Other priorities took precedent, and this ALP actually took a back seat. In fact, most of my assignments was done in the 11th hour, last minute. So there was the difficulties, but as the saying goes, when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. So we decided we must do something about that. And therefore we started looking at what we learned. Actually, this presentation is not fully tweaked up. I was supposed to give it tonight, so I was going to tweak it a bit more. So, excuse me, there's some discrepancies here. So, what was taught by Braj Mohan Prabhu, conscious leadership course, we analyzed that, we analyzed the situation, and specifically this particular individual devotee who was deemed disenchanted, the main player. The PR team, we have to motivate him, we have to assess his readiness, performance levels, ability and willingness. And he was actually analyzed as R3. He was shipwrecked, survivor, the needy, he was able but insecure. His performance level was moderate, and these are some of the things and we learned from the course actually fitted in perfectly in his personality at that particular time. And the target was to turn him from R3 to R4 and become a superstar, able and confident and willing again, to bring back his high performance levels as he was doing before. And these are some of the indicators for R4 as it was pointed out in the course. And the leadership style used was S3, supporting, encouraging, actively listening, two-way communication, etc., etc. And that actually worked. That worked a lot. In fact, he came back to his normal self. The benefits was he was back to R4 where he was. Increase in PR activity. Although 50% of our team, but the activity increased. We had more meetings. We hosted more individuals. I was supposed to put some pictures. I didn't have the pictures. We attended many functions, we had a lot of political activity taking place in the sense, meeting with politicians, going to Bhopal, which is the capital of Madhya Pradesh, meeting the civil servants and the politicians. This particular PIL, which was taken up against ISKCON 3 years ago, final hearing, took place because of pushing. Although the Indore High Court ordered the government, state government, to hear the case within 3 months, i.e. 2 years ago, but they haven't done nothing. This is India, that's how the legal system works. So we had to push for this particular hearing to take place. We had to meet people, the secretaries, principal secretaries, and that was the result of just motivating and encouraging R3 to R4. And we got a positive, definitely response from the media and the community. This yellow journalistic attitude did reduce and is reducing. There's some work still needs to be done. And again, the image of positive image of ISKCON, Inogen is coming back. Now, lessons on particular this, ALP learned from college was skills were gained, systematic and sensitive approach was taken, application was methodical, quick and assured results. All the above three are there, quick and assured results are there automatically. And it's very useful for any zone supervisor, not just this particular aspect of training, but all the aspects, all the training we've had, Radha Krishna put this list of those assignments. In fact, all of them are very useful indeed. But the flip side can be of this training when you teach, begin to teach this to your team or the other individuals, there's resistance to learn. Because it's new. You know, there's always danger. Whenever there's a paradigm shift, people are resistant to learn and accept. And many of them cannot relate to this particular type of learning. They're used to other types of learning. And they think that's about spiritual activity, though. I'm sure we all experience that. But what is the way forward? The way forward is, for the next 6 months, we're going to recruit more members, bring it back to 4 or 5, provide training to them. Islam meditation courses coming up, I think, in October, and later this month. Apply tools. Instead of applying tools to the members, we're going to apply all these tools to the media people, to the politicians, and important community members, especially civil servants, because they're the ones who can the most. And on top of what we're doing, we're going to include the Kumbh Mela, which is coming up next year. So you're all invited to come from 22nd of April to 21st of May. I think I'd like to stop here. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Is there any questions? It was a bit brief. I could have gone a bit more, a lot of more things. It was at the last minute, this last night.
Whatever.
24/7. Marsh, so we go up to 12:30, right? With a break, obviously, and everything.
Okay, whatever.
No, you tell me. We've got that deal.
12 is okay. Anyway, let's see how it goes. 12 is okay for me. Huh? I said 12.
Oh, 12.
That's what we'll Goranga told me.
Let's see. Okay. Just talk.
Hare Krishna, before listening to Maharaj, I just wanted to make a point about yesterday, about the red and black game. Now, the general spirit of the college is that whatever you experience here, whatever you learn here, you bring it to your place. Right? That's the spirit. You learn something, you bring it, you teach it to your place. Now, the red-black game, it's in a different category because it's a bit sensitive. I mean, we are even seeing here among powerful leaders of Islam that reaction indicated some sort of discomfort, some level of discomfort. So, I obviously cannot forbid you from doing it in your place, but I strongly recommend, I strongly encourage you not to do it, or not to do it just because you do it once. Personally, I took it once as a participant, I took it 5, 6, 7 times as an assistant, as an observer, discussing the professional facilitator who was leading it. Then with my wife, we ran this game different parts of the world, 6, 7 times, I mean. So we do have some experience. There's a lot to do with the context in which the game is placed, not just the game itself, the context in your training. It's not just something plug and play, you take it and you give it. It doesn't work like that. there is obviously some sensitivity in what words you use, in what words you don't use, or how you process the feedback. So I would say that leading that exercise is a bit it needs generally with a little more training than just taking it as a participant. So I encourage you not to just jump and okay, I'm going back to
what that kind of game it is.
It's a game to win. One group is in this room, the other group is in another room.
And if you have more questions or more support, please come to me personally. We'll discuss. Thank you very much. Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. Very happy to see everyone. But first I wanted to do some disclaimer. I was not planning to give anything this session, and basically I was gently pushed into it yesterday by Gauranga Prabhu, so the very fact that I am here in front of you is the act of unwilling service from my side. The only reason why I agreed to this, I mean, there are so many reasons why I didn't want to do this. I'm fasting and I just came yesterday and I'm totally unprepared. But the only reason why I agreed to this, first of all, of course, my greatest respect to him and his endeavor to fill up the space in the GBC college. And the second reason is that the topic is offenses, and because I have a lot of experience in this field, I agreed to do this. I thought that it will be a very authoritative presentation based on experience. Anyway, Gauranga Prabhu asked me to speak something about the results of the offenses which we all can experience in one way or another, and the psychological distortion towards bhakti which is a result of offenses. This is described in great detail by Sivajiva Goswami in Bhakti Sandarbha, but I will read first the verse from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita from Antilila chapter 4, text 71, and then try to elaborate on this. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Adeshatarini Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyascha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Ajahnam Bhita Vajapana Kavadakasam Kirtanay Kutirakamaya Kusam Shanda Kavijavarama Vandehi Jagat Priya Karo Karanavata Antah Pravishi Mama Vachimavam Prasuktim Sanjeevaya Tekila Shakti Daraksvadam Nanyam Shahasta Charana Shravana Tvaga Dhyam Pranam Namah Bhagavate Purusha Aitanyam Arade Bhagavan Brajeshatanaista Dham Vrindavanam Ramya Kachit Upasana Vrajavadu Vargyane Kalpitam Shriman Bhagavatam Pramanam Prema Pumartam Aham Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Madhamidam Tatra Dharona Parahama. Okay, so the verse from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is reads as follows. Taramadhi Sarva Shrestha Nama Sankirtan Niraparadhi Nama Laili Pai Premadhan. Of the nine processes of devotional service, the most important is always to chant the holy name of the Lord. If one does so, avoiding the 10 kinds of offenses, one very easily obtains the most valuable love of Godhead, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada gave elaborate and very interesting purport to this verse. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu gives the following directions in his Bhakti Sandarbha 270. Iyamcha kirtanakya bhaktir bhagavato dravya jati guna kriyabhir dina janaika vishaya para karuna mayatri maitri maiti shruti puranadi vishrutihi ataeva kalu svabhavata evati dineshu lokeshu avirbhuya tan Anya asenaiva tattat yugagata maha sadhananam sarvameva phalam dadana sa kritarthayati yata eva tayaiva kalo bhagavato visheshatas cha santosho bhavati. Перевод translation by Srila Prabhupada. Chanting the holy name is the chief means of attaining love of Godhead. This chanting or devotional service does not depend on any paraphernalia, nor on one's having taken birth in a good family. By humility and meekness, one attracts the attention of Krishna. That is the verdict of all the Vedas. Therefore, if one becomes very humble and meek, he can easily attain the lotus feet of Krishna in this age of Kali. That is the fulfillment of great sacrifices, penances and austerities, because when one achieves ecstatic love of Godhead, he attains the complete perfection of life. Therefore, whatever one does in executing devotional service must be accompanied by the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. The chanting of the holy name of Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, has been praised by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Namastaka, verse number one. The quote was over before. Nikila Shruti Mauli Ratnamala Dyuti Nirajata Pada Pankajanta Ai Mukta Kularu Pasyamanam Paritastvam Harinama Samshrayani. O Harinam, the tips of the toes of your lotus feet are constantly being worshipped by the glowing radiance emanating from the string of gems known as the Upanishads, the crown jewels of all the Vedas. You are eternally adorned by liberated souls such as Narada and Shukadeva. O Harinam, I take complete shelter of you. Similarly, Srila Sanatana Goswami has praised the chanting of the holy name as follows in his Brihad Bhagavandamrita. Jayati Jayati Namananda Rupa Murari Vishra Viramita Nija Dharma Dhyana Pujadi Yatnam Kathamapi Sakritatam Muktidam Praninam Yat Paramam Amritam Ekam Jivanam Bhushanam Me. All glories of glories to the all blissful holy name of Sri Krishna, which causes the devotee to give up all the conventional religious duties, meditation and worship. When somehow or other uttered, even once by a living entity, the holy name awards him liberation. The holy name of Krishna is the highest nectar. This is my very life and my only treasure. And Srimad Bhagavatam Sukadeva Goswami says that Tan Nirvidyamana Nam Vichatama Kutobayam Yoginam Nripan Nirvinam Nirnitam Harer Namanu Kirtanam. No king, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of great authorities and is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Yamaraja says, Etavan eva lokismin pumsam dharma parasmritam bhakti yoga bhagavati tannama grahanadibi. Devotional service beginning with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is the ultimate religious principle for the living entity in human society. Similarly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said in his Shikshastakam, Trinada pisunichina tarorivasa hishnuna amanina manadina kirtani yasadahari. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than a straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige and ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly, regarding the 10 offenses chanting of the holy name, in the chanting of the holy name, one may refer to Adi Lila chapter 8, text 24. Again the verse, Taramadi Sarva Shrestha Nama Sankirtan Nira Paradi Nama Loya. Pai Premadan. Of the 9 processes of devotional service, the most important is to always chant the holy name of the Lord. If one does so, avoiding the 10 kinds of offenses, one very easily obtains the most valuable love of Godhead. I have to say in the very beginning that I feel very awkward that I am speaking in front of such an illustrious assembly of devotees, and I need your at least good wishes and blessings to say something worthwhile. We all have heard the glorification of the holy name of the Lord, the amazing powers of the glory name of the, oh, of the holy name of the Lord. Again and again it is being repeated. The question here in front of us, and we all know the answer to this question, which makes it even more difficult to speak about, why we do not have the taste for the holy name. And we all know the answer. The answer is simple, aparad. And the first point which I want to make is that everyone, to a different extent, is guilty of aparads. It's not that in this world anyone is completely free from aparads. And in the first part of my little presentation, which is totally unprepared, I will try to draw the distinction between aparad and the sin. We all know that everyone is guilty in sins. We are all sinful by nature. We are bringing our sinful nature into this life from our previous lives. But we also, together with the sins, we are bringing the offensive nature, which is there. And it's very important to understand the difference between the sin and the offense, aparad. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, while analyzing the anatomy of anarthas, he basically points out that aparadas or offenses are stemming out from the ignorance. And everyone is ignorant. He says that there are four kinds of anarthas which are there in everyone's heart, starting with tattva vibram, And Tattva Vibram means the ignorance of Tattva or the truth. And he classifies into four, saying that there are four Tattva Vibrams, four bewilderment, four mistakes which we naturally do being born in this body. Everyone who has a material body has some ignorance and some Tattva Vibram, so which naturally brings about desires. The next sort of category of anarthas is the material desires, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur again classifies into four. But what I want to say, I'm sure you know this, but I want to draw a connection between these categories of anarthas. Bhaktivinoda Thakur first starts with Tattva Vibram, which is the basis of everything else. Then from Tattva Vibram, from the bewilderment about the truth, from the ignorance about the truth, from the natural identification with matter, we again, in a very natural way, develop some material desires. Srila Prabhupada used to say that, you know, when somebody asked him until what time I will have lust, and he gave very clear answer, you know, until you have this material body. So the very fact that we have material body means that we have material desires. And of course, material desires can be classified in many different categories. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says just gross material desires for enjoyment, material desires of heavenly enjoyment in the next life, the desires to have mystic powers, and ultimately the desire to have liberation, which is also classified by Bhaktivinoda Thakur as the material desire. But the next point, or the next category of anartha, so the problems which we have to deal with, is offense, aparada, which in turn creates certain nature in us. And ultimately, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, while describing this progression of anarthas, he takes some sort of lead from Srila Jiva Goswami, from his description in Bhakti Sandarbha. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur basically says that then there are offensive nature of conditioned living entities manifest, and this offensive nature is the manifest as the offenses against God, offenses against the devotees, offenses against the holy name of the Lord, and offenses against the ordinary living entities, chitkana, the sparks of consciousness. And then basically he says that there are four weaknesses of the heart, which is the result of offenses. The weaknesses of the heart, or crooked nature which we have, started from this kutilata, from the crookedness, is the result of the offenses, which culminates in svapratishtata, or matsarya actually, the envy, which is there. But anyway, what I wanted to stress at the very outset is that nobody is free from offense in this material world. Either in this life or in previous life, we committed some offenses, and while analyzing this blocking power of offenses, and this is the blocking power of offenses which actually the impediment for us to experience the power of the holy name, Srila Jiva Goswami specifically says that this is the previous offenses, these offenses which we performed even in the previous lives. So we're coming to this life with some luggage, with some baggage of offenses. And because of this offensive nature, naturally we cannot perform the devotional service properly, and in this way experience the promised results of devotional service. And therefore, it is a normal practice for normal people, which is 99.9% people, to repeat or to do sadhana. There is a beautiful, there is a sutra in Vedanta Sutra, avritir asakrit upadeshat, that why the scriptures prescribe to repeat certain activities. And the scriptures, Balada Vidya Bhushan explains why this prescription is there, whereas it is also said in the scriptures that it's enough to repeat the holy name once. But at the same time, we see this prescription that we have to repeat, asakrit. Avritir asakrit upadeshit. You know, to uncover certain things, we have to, because of the teachings of the Vedas, we have to repeat it again and again and again. We have to repeat it. And the example which is given from Vedas itself, from Upanishads, which is given by Baladeva Vidya Bhushan, is that Svetaketu in Chandogya Upanishad, he repeated 9 times, Tattvamasi. You are not this body. And we heard this many more times from Srila Prabhupada. And the question is, why do you have to repeat this? And sometimes even devotees, they wonder, you know, we already heard this. But this is, you know, this is coming from Vedas itself, meaning that certain things we have to repeat, because we cannot really realize these things immediately. It's the injunction of the Vedas. It has to be repeated again and again and again. As Srila Jiva Goswami explains in Bhaktisandarbha, the reason is this, and not only in Bhaktisandarbha, in many other places, and there is also a verse in Padma Puran which explains this, the same thing, is that offenses itself have the blocking power. There is the power to block the power of spiritual practices. That's basically the definition of offenses. Offense is something, it's the functional definition of offense. If we want to know functionally what offense does exactly this thing. It blocks the spiritual power. It may sound paradoxically, because spiritual power is, and that is, by the way, the distinction between the sin and offense. The sin doesn't block the spiritual power of spiritual practices, of various kinds of spiritual practices. The sin is very easily, susceptible to spiritual practices, very easily removed by simple spiritual practices. Powerful and less powerful. But offense is not. Just because of this capacity, inbuilt capacity in the offense to block the spiritual power. And the example which is given, often given, is that, the fire has the capacity to burn. But in reality, we can see that this capacity to burn from the fire also very much depends on the material which it is applied for. If it is a green grass, you can use many matchboxes to try, trying to burn it. But if it's oil, you don't need. Or if it's dry grass, you need just one match and. Phew, it's inflamed. So this is the situation which we are dealing with. If the grass is wet, and wetness of the grass in our particular case is the presence of the offense, which is, as I said, present practically in everyone. And then we will have to repeat it. In other words, we will have to repeat, trying to burn it, to dry it up first. Why this repetition is prescribed? Because first we have to dry up and make it flammable, so to speak. And when it is flammable, then very easily all the spiritual practice will have an effect. So that's the foundation which is there in Vedanta Sutra, even why the spiritual practice has to be repeated. And Patanjali Muni in his Yoga Sutra, he also stresses this point. He says that certain practice becomes spiritual practice, becomes sadhana, only if it's repeated again and again and again for a long time, every day, with certain mood. He basically says that sadhana or abhyas, he gives the definition of abhyas. He says that certain practice becomes abhyas or sadhana or helps one to reach the goal only if it has the three characteristics. First characteristic is that it's narantarya, first characteristic is that dirghakal. It's being done for a long time. And it basically refers to our own case, you know, why does it take so long? Dirghakal, Patanjali Muni says, if you want to practice yoga, count to practice it for a long time. Don't be naive. Don't be too optimistic about your own abilities to do it. Then do it, nirantarya means you do it without any cessation, without a break. And every one of us knows, as soon as we break the spiritual practice, you know, we are back to square one, more or less. And we have to climb again to the level which we achieved. And the next very important point, and very interesting point too, he says satkarya means that you have to do it with certain mood of reverence. You have to do it not just mechanically, with shraddha, with faith. Because if you do it mechanically without real faith into the practice that it will bring you to the final goal, then it will not really work. It will not become the spiritual practice as such. Having said this, I wanted to come to the main topic at hand. What happens when we commit offenses knowingly or unknowingly? Because even unknowing offenses are not freeing us from the reactions for unknowing offenses. And that's why the conscious practice is so important, because the only remedy against the unknowing offenses is bringing the consciousness into what we are doing and trying to do it properly. So before I start this, I again wanted to go a little back to the difference between the sin and offenses. What is the sin and what is the offense? We all know that in Sanskrit there are two words which denote many words. Especially for sin, there is a lot of words which is used. Pap, we know, agha, it's also sin. Impurity, amal, and so many other things. But first I wanted to bring your attention to this notion of agha. It's a very interesting concept behind the scene. Because again, not many people, even religious people in other religions, they can define what is sin and why certain activities are labeled as sinful. And this notion, which is depicted by this word agha for sin, is that agha basically means something which is very difficult to destroy. Yes, Tukaram Prabhu?
Maharaj, I have some questions, but I can hold them, but they're related to the last section. I can hold them until the end, or I can ask them.
It's probably better if it's. If it's being, if you keep it.
Yes, Maharaj.
Because again, I'm not very structured, not very prepared, so I'm doing whatever I. It's probably better if I would be more ready. And especially, I know your questions, so. I don't want my presentation to be spoiled prematurely.
They're all questions of appreciation and they're simple. They won't be difficult.
Okay. I don't believe you, but anyway. I know your questions very well. I know you long enough. It can be very tricky. So better I, you know, I just blurt out whatever I I can, and then hopefully the time will be over. Anyway, so the what is the difference? And the difference is actually very important for us to understand. First of all, the definition of sin, which is inbuilt into this word agham, which means basically difficult to destroy, because the Sanskrit root gda means to destroy. Agham means something which you cannot really destroy. So this particular definition is important to understand how the sin works. It basically creates a very powerful samskara within our mind, which is difficult to destroy. And this samskara becomes our nature. What is the problem with the sins is that it becomes our nature, and we all know how difficult it is to change the nature. We bring our sinful nature from previous lives. And bringing this sinful nature here, we tend to repeat the same things again and again and again, because this samskaras or vasanas, the samskaras which are being repeated, which are very strong, they form vasanas. And vasana basically means the dress. This is the dress of the soul. Vasana means the nature which is dressing the spiritual nature of the soul, which is covering up the spiritual nature of the soul and does not allow it to manifest it in a very powerful way. So the sin, why sin is bad is exactly because of this, and ultimately the sin is bad because it forces us to forget about Krishna. Whatever sinful activities we do, why it is sinful, why the Vedas, why the scriptures, Dharma Shastras, label it as sinful, because of this reason, because it ultimately takes us from the goal of practicing Vedas. The goal of practicing Vedas, we know, Srila Prabhupada often quoted this verse, Satatam, what is it? Smartavya satatam vishnum vismartavya najatuti sarva vidi nishedesyu etayoreva kinkarah. That the goal of all the rules is to remember about Vishnu, and all, the goal of all the prohibitions of nishedas is to not forget. In other words, if nisheda is there, if the prohibition is there in the Vedas, it means that this particular activity forces us to forget about Vishnu. While, you know, sometimes people ask why eating chocolate is bad. You know, and there is no clear answer, you know, but because Srila Prabhupada said or whatever, or somebody said, but he ate himself, you know, once he was offered this. But the simple reason is this. It basically facilitates our forgetfulness of Krishna and reinforces and strengthens our forgetful nature of Krishna. More or less kind of reinforces our beginningless forgetfulness of Krishna, which brings about the whole chain of chain reaction of unfortunate events. But again, having said this, we know that certain spiritual practices are very powerful and they destroy the sinful nature very easily. Therefore, it's important to understand the difference between the sin and aparad. An aparad, again, by the very Sanskrit word, which is there in aparad, means aparad. Apa means, like in English word, apart, which is taking us apart, taking us away. Something which takes us far away from Rad, from this mood of Aradan. Srila Prabhupada, he explained this, that this Aradan, the mood of worshipping something, the mood of reverence, the mood of love, basically. And love is the culmination of and we know that that's why Radharani is called Radharani, because she is the best worshipper, because she has this mood of worshipping completely pure and in the highest possible level. So aparad is something which is contrary to the mood of worshipping, obeying, serving. And that's why, that's exactly why in this particular purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes Bhaktisandarbha from Srila Jiva Goswami and says that if we want to experience these results of the chanting of the holy name, the only remedy is Trinada Pisa Nichina Tarora Pisa Hishnana Amani Namanada Nakirta Tarore Vasa Hishnana Amani Namanada Nakirtaniya Sadahari. So he stresses this humility or dinatva, as Srila Jiva Goswami mentions in his Bhakti Sandarbha, that's something which is the remedy against the offenses and something which can restore this reverential mood, the mood of service within ourselves. So, by the very definition, the aparad is something different. So the basic difference is that sin affects the mind and the body. It leaves a very strong impression in the body, and we all know this, and leaves a very strong impression in the mind. But aparad goes deeper. Aparad touches the soul, so to speak, the heart of the living entity. And basically creates the nature of being condescending, proud, prone to commit offenses against others, and so many other things. So the difference is more or less in the conscious mood of doing something against other living entities, against God, against the holy name, you know, which is there deeply ingrained in our nature. And Srila Jiva Goswami starts this section from a very important point. He says that if we have an offensive nature, how it manifests in our perception of reality. He says that the perception of somebody who has the offensive nature is that he sees some things which are spiritual by nature, but he doesn't recognize the spiritual nature of the things. He may see God himself in front of him, but he will not be able to recognize his spiritual nature. Basically, Srila Jiva Goswami says that if somebody is offensive, he cannot see or recognize the spiritual nature in Bhagavan, Bhakti and Bhakta. He just doesn't see the spiritual nature. He only sees material component of it. Like we see Bhakta and we say, oh yeah, who he thinks he is, you know, he's just a pretender, this and that. We cannot really recognize this spiritual side of a person. And we tend to say that he's sahaji or this or that, you know. We will apply or project our spiritual conception while seeing people. Or if we see, the direct manifestation of God in front, in the form of deity or in the form of this holy name, again, we will perceive it as something material. It's just a material sound. We will not be able immediately on the spot, only by inconceivable mercy of Krishna, we will be able to sometimes, rarely, recognize or distinguish the spiritual nature of the holy name or the spiritual nature of the deity of the Lord. And of course, the spiritual nature of bhakti itself will be very difficult to perceive in the beginning, because we will tend to see it as an ordinary activity or something which is not so impressive, not so spiritual. You know, very often people, they say, no, it's yoga is something, you know, you meditate, you have to concentrate your mind, you have to stand upside down, and what is this, you know, just sentimental sort of things. So that's, again, this is all the defect in the perception, which is the symptom of our offensive nature, our inability to really recognize the spiritual nature in the manifestations of spirit, in the direct manifestations of spirit here in this material world, in Bhakta's Bhagavan and his manifestation. We will not be able to recognize the spiritual manifestation in Srimad Bhagavatam and scriptures, and so many other things are there. So, exactly like sins, aparad tends to repeat itself. The problem of the sin is that, while committing it once, or especially if it leaves a very strong impression within you, then you will be able, you develop a certain nature which covers your knowledge, and you tend to repeat the same thing because it becomes your nature. The same thing is with aparadas. Aparadas also tend to repeat itself. Srila Jiva Goswami will give an example of Daksha. He says, supposedly Daksha was cleared from his offense in his previous life, his offense to Lord Shiva. But in the next life, what did he do? He committed the same offense. So this clearance of offense was not complete, and therefore the tendency remained for the same offense. Moreover, he committed more severe offense this time against Narada Muni, in Srimad Bhagavatam it is described. So in this way, aparadha and sina have similar nature, but again, the difference is that in case of sin, you just you just commit it because in your mind or in your body there is certain habits which you develop. Whereas in aparadha, you have certain conscious attitude. Okay, thank you. Kaunteya Prabhu suggests that we have a break. Please let me know when you are switched off, and when we can have it in maybe in 10 minutes. Okay. So in this way, offense and sin have similar nature because we tend to reinforce our offensive nature by committing further offenses again and again and again. That's why it's so difficult. First of all, it's very deep. Second of all, sometimes we are not really understanding it because of this kutilata, because of the crookedness which we develop, because of the cheating propensity. We cannot see it clearly within ourselves. We cannot really introspect clearly enough to see the offensive nature because of our rationalizations and everything. We will we will blame others. Because it's very deep in us. So basically, Srila Jiva Goswami first, as I said, he explains, this is the Anucheda 154 and 153, 154, 155. I think it goes until 158, if I'm not mistaken. He basically says that the first manifestation, immediate manifestation, or the first distortion which is coming as a result of the offense is this kutilata, kautilyam or crookedness. Kautilyam or crookedness, I mean, and we all know that we have some, crooked features in ourselves. It basically means that we want to present ourselves differently than we are, and we always keep in mind some certain not very, pure motive while we are entering into relationship. It basically means that we are not straightforward. Kutilata basically means that we are really crooked, like a hook, And hook is used in fishing. And sometimes we successfully use our crookedness in fishing others, getting some benefits from others. In Hitopadesh there is this famous story about the, which is describing this nature, which is specifically actually pertinent to those who are engaged in spiritual practices, unfortunately. If we have this offensive nature and we perform the spiritual practices offensively, then we develop this offensive attitude towards this crooked attitude towards spiritual practice, and we want to gain something from the spiritual practice. The story from Hitapadesh is about the tiger who retired, and he was sitting there, and you know, he was old enough not to be able to catch anyone, and he had the golden bracelet, and he saw some traveler in the jungles, and he started saying to this traveler, "Come to me, because I gave a vow every day to give some charity. And I have this nice golden bracelet. I mean, I'm a pure vegetarian. I'm practically vegan now. I'm not into you, please believe me. I just want to give you spiritual, the golden bracelet." And of course, the stupid traveler believes it. But anyway, so we can catch ourselves sometimes while preaching that we keep our, you know, non-vegetarian nature while preaching, trying to gain something from the people in exchange of our, you know, whatever it is, whatever we give, whatever you call it. So that's the crookedness, the crooked attitude towards the spiritual activities, trying to sell our spiritual practice or spiritual philosophy in exchange of some donations or some sponsorship or whatever it is. You know, unfortunately, you have seen Radha Krishna Prabhu who spent 100+ hours in trying to figure out how to get people for fundraising. So, and every one of us has this, you know, headaches more or less, unless we are. Anyway, so this crookedness is the first result and of our imperfect, improper practice of spiritual sadhana, of chanting of the holy name. First and foremost, the chanting of the holy name with offenses. And we can see, actually, this is the very clear indicator what is being developed on us, whether we're becoming more straightforward or we're becoming even more crooked. Whether our ability to introspect and, you know, do some self-analysis, how we're doing, what we're doing, whether it's become more sharp or it becomes more blurry. Because sometimes we can see it, I'm fine, I'm okay, you know, people are... you know, this self-deception mechanism, sometimes they're really strengthened in the course of spiritual practice. Somebody practiced spiritual practice for 30 years and he still cannot, is not able, or even less able to see some problems in the spiritual practice. And that's definitely a problem of all the leaders. Because, first of all, we have plenty of opportunities to, you know, to relate to devotees as somebody material. As a material people with material, you know, not to see the material side of devotees. And we have plenty of opportunities to, you know, to kind of use all sort of manipulative techniques by trying to, you know, people to get what we want them to do. And therefore, we can also have to be very, you know, alert in seeing whether we're becoming more straightforward or our crooked nature becomes stronger. Whether our more or less self-defense line becomes fortified, you know, because every one of us has certain, you know, self-defensive nature, self-defense, trying to explain or rationalize in front of ourselves that we are okay, we are fine, You know, instead of developing this humble mood, we are trying to defend ourselves. I'm okay, I'm fine, I'm good, I'm doing great, everything is great, you know. I'm chanting for 30 years, nothing happens, but still I'm okay. I'm a GBC, you know, or guru, or whatever it is. I'm a leader. This is not the sign of spiritual advancement. It may, you know, in the sense that you're taking more responsibility, but we also have to be very clear about it, that the sign of spiritual advancement is only the taste for holy name. And if it doesn't grow, something must be wrong. And we have to see really whether our, you know, nature to rationalize and to explain everything very in a very elaborate way, becoming stronger in the course of our activity. So our nature for self-introspection and real humility, understanding that I am good for nothing, becomes stronger and stronger due to this. Okay, we can do. Srila Jiva Goswami goes on explaining four more things in the progression, how it goes, and I will, you know, continue after break. How many? 15 minutes? 10 minutes break. Thank you very much. Is it goes?
Very good. On track. Perfect. Very important. Thank you.
I have a very humble request, if you don't mind. What you're speaking is full of nectar, but it's a little fast to capture.
Oh, it's fast?
Yeah.
I thought it's too slow.
No. It's a little difficult for me. I don't know if others.
Okay. Okay.
But there's so much.
Sorry.
How are you,
Manas? I'm fine, thank you.
Nice to see you.
I'm very happy to see you. Very happy. Yeah, I'm just... Okay. А там уже мед?
Да.
Окей.
Да,
отлично. Я пощусь. Уже четвертый день. Травы, мед и лимон.
Ты вас посадил эти цветы?
Посадил. Ну, несколько бледных постелей, если хорошо.
И
говорят, да, говорят, могут выйти. Я все пытаюсь.
Ну, это если в том случае, если они созданы.
Ну да, они говорят, могут размягчиться, если 21.
Что, если это из нарост?
Ну, понятно, понятно. Если это уже холестериновый, кальцинированный.
У вас хороший, да? Который вам преподаватель в Нальчике.
Доктор в Нальчике? По поводу этого нет, не особенно. Ну, в целом ничего.
Мне интересно, Мараш, преданный Юра Горб. Он мне, я познакомился с Сознанием Кришны, присоединился. Ну, не там, в Киеве еще, конечно. И вот я его встретил через 15 лет, и он мне рассказывал, как он проповедует песни, там чистит песни ко мне. Потрясающе.
Да?
Я 108 раз, говорит, чистил. И вот говорит,
это Киев. Не, ну это когда маленький, когда большой, это может быть опасно. Да? Нет, может быть, в начале, когда нет ко мне.
Нет. Вот именно он говорит, что он там целая система. Мы даже записываем заметки, может, какие-то на вооружение. Он говорит, я просто опыт уже 20, наверное, я чищу. Я говорит, каждый год я чищу принципиально. Там, в январе, а целый месяц. И каждые два дня говорит, чищу. Ну, у меня уже практика появилась. Говорит, на специальный там день по луне. Там грелка, там еще какой-то делается.
Ну, это обычная вещь с маслом с этим.
Да.
Ну, просто травма. Это... Сначала, потом это, но сначала нужно их немножко разлучить, поэтому.
Вот такой вопрос, можно спрошу вас по существу, потому что там забабят вас вопросами. Вот вы говорите, допустим, если человек практикует, да, и у него появляется понимание того, что ты годен для ничего, то есть бесполезен. При всем при этом, если такое чувство есть, но при этом тоже понимаешь, что у тебя столько еще оскорблений на самом деле сердце. Личность такая, в общем-то, есть. Начинаешь копаться там внутри сердца. И, в общем-то, все-таки понимаешь, что результат твоего поведения — это не оскорбление. Вот. И так получается такая двойная. Внешне тебе вроде получаешь прославление, и Кришна тебя приподнимает, а внутри понимаешь, какая, в общем-то, эта личность на самом деле.
Ну, это надо опасность лидера. Любой лидер находится в этом опасном положении. С одной стороны, мы не можем, мы должны некую марку поддерживать.
Ну, да. То есть ты обязан.
Мы не можем, да. Вот, но просто внутри, повторяя святого, наедине со святым именем я должен быть очень смиренным. И понимать, что это, что проблемы-то есть. Спасибо, что приехали. Правда, его не будет, Праджмохана, так что,
да.
Так что ваши цели. Окей, да, мы поговорим. Хорошо. Я перед отъездом самым как раз еще провел продолжение. Интересно, я думаю, вам будет тоже. Hare Krishna.
Do we know what flavors they? Do we know what flavors they have?
No, thank you. Hare Krishna.
All good? Maharaj, you're not happy with me.
No, I'm very happy with you. Oh, look at him, you know, you're one of my heroes. I just can't understand how you can be so intelligent and have such a strong body at the same time. It's usually incompatible.
It's usually one or the other, right? My questions are not designed to stump you.
Okay.
They're designed to help me better understand.
I know. You always understand the subject better than the speaker.
You gave this point from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You made a connection between between Tattva Vibram and Asat Trishna.
Yeah.
I know that that did not come from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's like your own realization from looking at it. It's particularly brilliant. But you did not make the connection between Asat Trishna and Aparad, and Aparad and Hridayador Balya.
I can.
So I was really interested.
I can.
So things like this, questions like this.
Jai Maharaj, thank you so much. My belief is that nobody will ever have imagined that you were not prepared if you didn't have told them three times. What I'm going to tell them at some point, never say that you're not prepared. First of all, because technically it's not true. No, there has been study, there has been meditation, there has been presentation. And second, because in some case, maybe not in this case, but in some case, the audience loses kind of faith. You know, yeah. You're not prepared, you know. Anyway, we are beyond the beyond.
So, Kunte Prabhu, I'm supposed to also speak tomorrow.
See, oh. My understanding of what Gauranga Prabhu told me last night on the phone, so it was not that's my understanding. You teach today, right? Also in the afternoon?
No.
Oh, no, nothing in the afternoon.
No.
Okay,
no, he told me today and tomorrow.
But tomorrow, tomorrow is the second, certainly. It's not
that certainly. I will be happy with one session, but you know, if it's two, then probably I have to leave more time for questions or whatever.
See, there are two things. First of all, this is very precious. I mean, I'm seeing that the body is really absorbed. We need this. No, we need this beyond the ILPs and the this and that, whatever. We need this, especially like you. Speaking about the leaders that we need. This is first. Second point is that because Braj Mohan didn't come, we had to fill 4 days.
The gaps.
And, 4 days, about team building, this, that. So, if 1.5 day goes for this, it's great. Now, I don't know, again, I don't know if you have just traveled or what other engagements you have right now.
I'm on the fourth day of my fast.
Some
therapy? Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I'm okay. I'm not so weak.
Can I put the button in?
Yeah.
My understanding from our phone call was that Maharaj would teach also in the afternoon, but Maharaj wasn't aware of his
commitment. You told me yesterday, tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow means like morning, afternoon.
I can do morning and or can do afternoon if it goes okay.
Yeah. If it goes beyond.
So what are we looking at for today and tomorrow exactly?
That means this topic we can continue for today.
Today, all day, you mean?
That means we'll end at 12 to 15 or something. Can end a little early. Again, we'll continue. Afternoon 4 o'clock.
Myself.
Yeah.
Then I don't know whatever. Anyway, so then it's today.
That was your understanding.
Yeah.
And tomorrow? No.
I mean, then I said, you see how you're feeling and everything.
Aha, uh-huh, that's what you meant by two sessions. I thought it's just.
Yeah.
Oh, you took two lessons.
I took two lessons.
Fine tune the language.
Means today you see, and then, because last time's experience was like a different topic, and all, so this time fully spiritual. So they want to hear some different topics.
But also. I'm not so anyway, whatever.
Whatever you're recently in your tours.
Yeah.
One thing we will discuss, it would be great if some sort of sharing, no, also practical, look. Not zonal difficulties, zonal challenges.
Like that.
This happened, that happened.
How
we like a little case study, you know, Russia. I mean, Russia, I think you have enough difficulties to share.
Not cases.
Enough
cases.
But internal, external.
That's like tomorrow morning we could keep that.
I mean, that would
well,
be.
Well, let's see.
I mean, I'm just saying some case study, like colloquial, informal, biographical, and then people can share. Maybe we can even have an interaction section. What are the main problems in the fails?
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Vatade Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nitinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatavadi Nishatavine Panchakalpataravishya Kripasindhu Devacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shyadvaita Gadavakara Srivasati Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. Nityananda Pranprabhu surprised me by saying that I am going too fast and presenting this matter. Is it also impression of somebody else? Yeah? Okay.
I want it faster.
Yeah, I know. You have a different processor. I'm ready to give faster presentation, but I'm afraid that everyone else will be turned off. Anyway, maybe to make the pace a little slower, we can now, before continuing for the rest of the materials which I kind of can speak on, we can answer some questions. Is it a good idea?
Yes.
It will probably. Yes, Tukaram Prabhu.
I have some questions I can ask offline, but there are some I think it might be nice to overlook here, so I'll look into those. I might have missed it, but you mentioned this Asakrit Avritu Upadesh
Upadeshat.
And so, I heard that, and I got the point about Chitraketu mentioning 13 times, and so I heard some of the things. I wasn't quite able to understand the idea of why, by repetition, there's some specific value. So we can speak more on that.
Okay. Thank you. That's an interesting question. So basically, what is the nature of sadhana? Nature of sadhana, we're dealing with our conditioned nature, which is sum total of samskaras and vasanas, and which covers over our spiritual nature. So while doing the spiritual practice, sadhana, we are trying to counteract these samskaras, which are there already, and to create samskaras which will be deeper than the... Samskara and vasana. Samskara is usually, it's just imprint or impression which may not be so deep. When the certain samskaras become very deep and create clusters, according to yoga psychology, they form vasana, which is very deep nature. Like if you see a chart of a person, then certain traits of his nature are just, there, and you can see them, but they are not so strongly indicated, and certain things are very strongly indicated from different angles. You analyze it from different angles and you see it again and again and again, the same sort of nature is being revealed. So that's vasana. The nature of spiritual practice is more or less to counteract the conditioned nature which is there. For that we create better samskaras, or samskaras which are, if it's material samskaras, conducive for spiritual practice, right? If it's spiritual samskaras, still we need to strengthen them. The problem is that because we are improperly or not perfectly practicing, performing our spiritual practice, then the samskaras are shallow, not so deep, and they cannot really, you know, counteract the very deep offensive samskaras or whatever is there in our nature. And that's why the repetition is the means to make samskara deeper. You know, like for example, if you do something repeatedly, even though you are not really, you know, don't get so much pleasure, but because you're doing it again and again and again, you ultimately develop liking, because the samskaras becomes deeper and becomes your nature. So in the same way, we are repeating the same things again and again and again, so that you know, the samskaras become deeper and deeper and deeper, the spiritual samskara.
Maharaj, so if you chant one time and you are a blank slate,
yeah,
at tabula rasa,
yeah,
then that may be enough to give somebody. But because our nature is cotillion, because we have that temporary nature, then this sadhana, this repetition, is beneficial, because it begins to deal with that. Even if you do it imperfectly, by doing it again, eventually it makes the change.
Yeah. Basically, Srila Jiva Goswami, he says that the offenses, he classifies the offenses according to the degree of its severity?
Severity.
According to the degree of its severity into two categories. One, when it's not so severe, manifest or causes not to have the fall or the fruit of the spiritual activities. Another one completely deprives us of the ability to perform spiritual practice. You just, you know, the example of this is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where there is this Brahmana who came to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Benares and say, "This is amazing, you know, I went to this Mayavadi sannyasis and they're chanting Chaitanya and Brahman, but they cannot pronounce the name of Krishna." So basically Srila Jiva Goswami says it can come to the point when when your distaste or disgust even with the devotional practice or non-devotional nature becomes so strong, then you will not even be able to continue even with the, you know, faulty, defective practice of devotional service.
Maharaj, extrapolating from what you said, if someone is just committing pop, then by performing devotional activities, they'll be able to very quickly purify themselves. Mm-hmm. If they have aparad, this prohibits the fruits, and therefore practice eventually begins to wear away at that. Mm-hmm. If it's really bad, they're not doing sadhana at all, because they're actually averse.
The example which is given is the fever. The result of aparat, the comparison or metaphor of the aparat is the fever which one develops. And, you know, you may die from fever completely, or you may just lose the taste because of the fever. You may, you know, there are different degrees of fever. You may lose the taste. You may develop the fever which will prevent you even to get benefit from eating, because you eat and it only creates more toxins. So that's very severe state of aparat, when you are just doing something and it only, you know, creates even more difficult situation for you to do it properly. And one thing is just lack of taste, another thing is you aggravate your situation by doing this, and another thing is, of course, you know, you may die from high fever completely.
Well, this is like the watering the upashakas instead of the top, right?
Yeah.
The same idea.
Exactly the same idea. Watering the weeds.
Marsh, one other thing. You mentioned dinatva as being this feeling of fallenness, lowness,
Natvara, you say Kautilya, which is this feeling of crookedness.
Mm-hmm.
And these are almost given as antonyms for one another by Hindu Goswami.
Say it again, please. What was the last thing?
They're almost given like antonyms
yes.
for one another. And then you replace Dinatva with the idea of introspection and sort of self-assessment.
Yeah.
As kind of with your following, you can understand your actual position and relationship to everything.
Yeah.
And so we would know that in English almost as introspection,
yeah.
self-reflection.
Yeah.
And so you chose to give this as like a really solid way of understanding
yeah.
where your aparatus is.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas Kautilya prevents you from understanding where you really are and, you know, helps you to build up a false image of yourself, even for yourself, if it goes to a certain extent.
And so your best way...
Kapatao Kutinati.
Your best way of assessing how you're doing about Rod is to look at your ability to deeply introspect about your own situation. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's what conscious chanting or conscious practice of devotional service means. You try to do it consciously. Means basically understanding what's happening, what's going on in your mind, and you know what you're thinking about. What is your relationship with Krishna in this moment, and whatever it is. Yeah, Conte, Prabhu.
Would it be correct, Maharaj, to say that obviously there is difference between Pap and Aparad? But would it be correct to say that for the body we took initiation, we took vows to commit the Pap, or say break regulating principles in some form? Is also aparad because it's
it is. It's definitely aparad. It's definitely aparad. I mean, you know, if your consciousness at that moment is that I'm so fallen and I know it's wrong, and I know that this is, you know, something, but my somehow or other the sinful nature took over. Which is again a result of some aparatus, absolutely, then it's maybe not so bad, but we know that this is the seventh offense against the holy name. If we're just doing it casually and think that we will get away with it and there is no problem, I'll just commit sin, what's the big deal? Apichet sudara chero bachate mama na nevak, I am a sadhu, you know. Krishna himself says, sadhu reva samantarya. So this is not so good. This is definitely, that becomes aparad, that becomes the, you know, rationalization of your, if you feel very humble about this, that's fine. If you feel even, you know, so that's, definitely it becomes aparad.
A question on the social sphere. Sometimes we see, at least I see, that some leaders create almost like a kavacha, like an armor around themselves, saying that, basically saying whatever people say about me is an offense. And you go in some place, there is that sense of fear, almost like that aparatophobia that blocks any intelligent dialogue. So my question would be, how can we, as a movement, encourage free expression, in the sense sometimes legitimate doubts, or legitimate questions, or legitimate suggestions about the management or the leadership, without encouraging, obviously, behavior?
Thank you, it's an interesting question. From one point of view, as a leaders, showing the example to people, we have to really be, you know, pakka in a sense, trying to practice as much as possible, and we cannot, you know, always display this mood of being fallen and be too emphatic about it, because there are certain obligations which are, you know, especially if you deal with very new devotees, you can't just always say you're fallen. Like you yourself told me that your idea at one point to tell all these people, leaders assembled here, never to tell anyone that they are not prepared, because it may be interpreted wrongly and may, you know, develop some condescending attitude towards the speaker. So in a similar vein, if we are dealing with junior people, it's not very advisable to, you know, always be open. At the same time, we also have to, first of all, have to understand that the openness is there, should be there, and as we heard from Braj Mohan Prabhu in the first session, that the readiness to admit our mistakes is actually a great cause of respect. If we understand that in most cases there is no need to defend ourselves, especially to defend our false image, that it's much better to keep the service, leadership service, to admit the mistakes openly without making a big deal out of it, at least, you know, to our superiors or to our peers. That's one thing which will be helpful. And especially if we have the experience or see the examples of such people who, you know, who coming out openly about some weaknesses, at the same time, you know, were kept in a high esteem. That's one thing. Another thing is that, more directly to your point, how we should be open, at the same time not to be subject of criticism or not to encourage criticism. Then I think my answer would be, again, remembering the certain behaviors of, you know, which brings about the trust building behaviors. Two first one are about this. We have to give the feedback in a certain way which will be not threatening, and we have to teach people how to give the feedback in a respectful way and not to intimidate people or offend people, basically. So I think it's a matter of training how to be straightforward and be able to give feedback, but at the same time not offending people, because feedback, open feedback, does not necessarily mean offense. Offense means I want to bring somebody down. I'm basically trying to smash him or to smear him, to kind of smear his reputation. This is offense. And if this attitude is there, it cannot be, it should not be encouraged in any way or form. But the open feedback, open and respectful feedback, should be encouraged. So I'm totally against this attitude that we should just, you know, build up the fear of offense, you know, whatever, that any feedback in any shape or form is offensive. But we have to also be very clear that so-called feedback can constitute an offense, can be an offense. And there has to be very clear distinction between one and another.
Thank you much.
Yeah, Radha Krishna Prabhu.
condition. There are just two short questions. Well, what is your technical? You said that there are four types of anarthas, and you went up to three, and that is the fourth one.
Okay. Hrit Dorbalyam, the fourth one.
Okay.
The weakness of the heart, which also Bhaktivinoda Thakur breaks all of them into four categories, so it's all together 16.
Yeah.
I can name all of them if you want, but if it's not necessary.
And the other is that is it a offense if I do something that's obviously is an offense, but the other person doesn't feel offended? That's one thing. The other thing is the other way around. If I do something, it's not an offense, and the other person feels that it is like that.
Well. To this end, there is a famous verse from the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam where it is said that even if the person doesn't accept, the great person doesn't accept offense, but the dust from his lotus feet accepts the offense and, falls under the head of the offender. So, even if the person is so great that he doesn't notice the offense, it's still an offense. And Krishna noticed the offense, the holy name noticed the offense. As far as the, if your attitude was not offensive and still the person was offended, well, I think it's still some sort of offense. because you hurt the person and, you should be very careful of how to deal with this person, but it's probably better if the person is so sensitive, so irrationally sensitive, so to speak, then it's probably better not to, to keep a safe distance and not to create offense. But at the same time, if you didn't mean it and still you feel that the person was offended, then I think the best way is to very straightforwardly speak with the person, and it may clear the problem and to clear the offense and straighten everything. So, and if you are very pure in heart, if you don't really don't mean anything evil towards this person, and you just sincerely wanted to help him, then it would not be difficult. And even if he doesn't understand, just, keep the distance. What can we do? Yes.
You described about sin and you described about aparada. And you said that sin is more unintentional. Aparada is intentional. The Nectar Devotion talks about bija, tendencies, the propensity and bhakti will sort of dissolve, just engaging, in devotional service will eradicate that sin and, the seed also. I'm thinking in terms of aparada, is there a formula, because there are three or four kinds of aparada you spoke about. We learned that if you commit an offense that you speak of Vaishnava, then you go, you beg forgiveness, and you don't let the same thing recur again. I mean, from your side, are there like formulas or like clear-cut ways, guidance that you give to us, how we can avoid this committing of aparada in a different
avoid
categories?
the only possible way to avoid aparadas is to be conscious constantly and to be constantly alert while performing devotional service, which is again very difficult in our state. But the more conscious we become, the easier it becomes to avoid aparadas. And that's not a formula, because formula more or less implies some kind of mechanical arrangement, more or less mechanical. Whereas being conscious is not a mechanical arrangement and will never become a mechanical arrangement. So it's just, you know, you try to perform your sadhana and deal with the devotees in a very conscientious and conscious way.
When I say formula, I mean in terms of like body, mind, words.
Yeah, if you need formula, Trinadapi Sunichinata Rarivasa Hishnana is the formula. The formula is there, but this is the perfect formula which is already there. and the rest is, yeah, and the important component of this formula, which should not be overlooked or forgotten, which we usually forget, is, you know, Kirtaniya Sadahari, because we usually think that the formula is Trinada Pisa Nichina Tarara Pisa Hishnana Amani Namada Dana, but there is, you know, the fourth part of the formula, fifth part of the formula is Kirtaniya Sadahari. And that's exactly Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gives a very hilarious kind of very funny thing. He says that if you chant the holy name offensively, it's not really helping you in your spiritual practice. But he says at least you don't do any other nonsense. So in this sense, it's good. So. Yeah, Mahanthi.
It's also the case of Srila Rupa Goswami.
Yeah. Unintentionally. Yeah. Unintentionally. Yeah. Definitely. It's illustration to what Radha Krishna Prabhu said. Definitely. That even if we committed an intentional offense, and even if there is no offense, still, if somebody felt hurt, then the offense is there. Krishna takes the offense. Have to straighten it. Yeah.
This is related to this same theme in the context of leadership situation, where we have to take positions and we have to make sure that things are done. And at the same time, we have also to organize things better or improve. And over a period of time, people with better skill sets manifest. And we can see that the Vaishnava community will be pleased more, will be served better if someone else is given a certain service. But then someone else has been doing it for a long time. So in that case, you know, when you make a change in the seva, then the other person gets hurt and feels that I've lost this service, and he becomes very disappointed. So. Is it that cumulative incidents like this add up to the difficulties for leader? That is accumulating the reactions of hurtful sentiments of people who is leading?
Oh, you definitely, as a leader, we're definitely accumulating the reactions of people whom we hurt. And we're doing it in many different ways. It's practically inevitable being a leader and not to offend anyone. Initially when you started asking your question, I thought you're asking from the point of view of this old leader, you know, and I thought that this is, you know, for me it would be the best opportunity to do something else. You know, to do something in regard to improving the spiritual practice. So, well, of course, you know, there is one. I think that there is, if somebody is a sincere devotee, he has been a leader for a long time, and naturally he's attached to service and he's attached to certain influence which he has and everything else. So what I would say, talking from the point of view of the authority of such a person, helping him to come to the next stage, is that first of all, give it with the utmost honor, honoring his real contribution, explaining it to him and to everyone else that this is for him really the step forward in his devotional career, where he can...
He can't be a leader, he can be his seva.
Yes, seva. But still, he's attached to his. But still, you know, it has to be very clear for him and for everyone else that it's really an opportunity to go forward in the practice of devotional service. And the most and foremost, I would say, what is very essential is to kind of secure his place in the society of devotees. If he feels that he has a secure place in the society of devotees, if he is respected, he will be willing to share his experiences in devotional service with others, you know, to move to this stage that he is more like a counselor, and there is plenty of things to do, and he is still respected and recognized, and his contribution was recognized. So I think in this sense it will be as painless as it could be in principle, although it may be still, because sometimes, you know, we have too close association with our position, and it becomes a part of our ego, and it's very difficult to, you know, sort it out or take it away. So. Yes.
Thank you for tackling the subject matter so nicely. One observation
confirmed.
In my work, we have an online internet forum. Everybody's comments. And often they come with the management. So we use it as an online kind of discourse. Sometimes they go way too far. So what we've done recently is that in two cases we've had to give suspensions to them that they don't come. But as management we accept, you know,
the feedback.
We don't try to silence people and silence the voices at all. But we allow it to go on until it becomes a slander. It's kind of a slander. At that point, we tend to cut it off. But definitely, management, we're going to be cursed by so many people. I get that feeling that it's kind of wavering away. But I pray, I mean, I don't know what your opinion, I need to ask you. I pray that if our sincerity is genuine in performing that service, and that intention is not there to offend, then that the Lord will also see that.
Absolutely. Lord will definitely see it. And as I said, it's almost impossible to avoid the offenses. But at the same time, it is said that Aparada Sahasranidhi's verse from Padma Puran, from Aparada Bhajana Stotra in Padma Puran, where it is said that even if you commit thousands of offenses, but you take the complete shelter of the holy name, then gradually the offenses will be removed. So this is the ultimate remedy from all offenses. And what we are talking here about is our ability to take the complete shelter of the holy name, which is also not such an easy thing to do and cannot be taken for granted. So, but ultimately, yes, our hope is there, the, you know, complete shelter of the holy name, and therefore, you know, periodically there are some festivals and things like this where we can just forget that we are leaders and just take the shelter of the holy name and do this and only this. As far as this offensive nature of people, we should definitely not encourage it by our actions. And we should be very strong about it. We should we should not become the victims of offensive nature of people. It would go against their interest. So they should be strongly discouraged on doing this by means which are available to us. Madhu or okay. Okay.
Marsh, maybe I didn't catch half of your answer, but I got almost the sense that you were confirming that, oh yeah, the people are talking about management. People are talking bad about the management, or they are dissatisfied for some reason. So I got the impression you said, yeah, these are offenses, but you can be purified. In offenses of the managers, is it really like that, or sometimes people complain because of their tamas and rajas, and that's basically their problem? It's not that because they complain the manager is offensive necessarily.
Necessarily not. But still, there is a see. Usually why this offensive nature is developing in people, as I said, there is a connection between these verses by Bhaktivinoda Thakur explaining the development of anarthas. And he says, first, and this is again, is very clearly explained in this section which I was trying to elaborate on. It is said there that first you commit offenses, and then as a result of this, four things develop in your heart by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. First is tuchha sakti, you become attached to very insignificant things. We become attached to, to pains which other people inflicted to us. We are very attached, negatively, but very much attached. We cannot forgive them. You know, I know for people, the most difficult thing is just to forgive somebody. They want to cherish this pain which somebody inflicted. So this is one of the manifestations of tuchha sakti, the insignificant things which we are attached to. We're just holding to our heart. Then kutinati, fault finding. And then svapratishtata, the understanding that I have very special kind of type of devotion, which is very offensive but still very special. And matsarya. So what I want to say is that usually people, they develop this sort of nature. Yes, it's propelled by rajas and tamas, but it's also result of of their self-deception mechanism which they acquired, this kutinati and things like this, which in turn is a result of aparads or offenses.
So just to confirm,
so I wouldn't brand any, I definitely, I'm not, I wouldn't brand any criticism of the management as an offense, definitely, but, there is a good chance that some offensive attitude is behind it as well. So the point is that we have to teach people how to, deal with the problems which may be real. The real problems are there, there's no doubt about it, but we have to teach people how to deal with it in a responsible way. That's what I mean. Not just brand or blame anyone for this. That's, did I answer your question? Or still not? Maybe I didn't understand it.
No, it wasn't clear to me, and I think the responsibility for that when you were talking about, you say it's an offense. I wasn't.
It may be offense.
Again, I wasn't clear. It may be offense, but the people will say criticize the manager, or maybe offense from the side of the manager, or both.
No, it's a it's, you know, if people criticize basically finding faults, it's definitely offense of people. You know, how we react to this is another thing. You know, we shouldn't be too sensitive. It's, I think it's a disqualification for a manager if he has, if his skin is too thin. He has to have some, you know, rhinoceros skin. Definitely, he wants to be in this. So, and shouldn't be too sensitive. You're still not satisfied.
Because you asked me, I was okay.
I don't want to offend you, that's why.
See, I get 100% of the rhinoceros skin. That's certainly a qualification, and we are developing a course on how to develop rhinoceros skin.
Very useful.
But what I would say is, okay, whatever rhinoceros skin or any other skin, it's not that people, because, again, people, other people, kutinati means it's an offense because they feel bad about some decision, which is a totally legitimate decision. In other words, it's not necessarily.
Yeah, of course, of course, of course, of course. Of course, of course. People, as I said, it's, again, it's not necessarily that we have to take any offense which people take too seriously. You know, sometimes, you know, we understand that this is how it goes. You know? But still, we should try to rectify it if we hurt somebody's feeling. But it's not that we have to, you know, revert our legitimate decision because somebody took offense. Absolutely not.
Thank you.
Yes, please.
Thank you very much for this incredible analysis. And what I want to ask you, you have already, to a large extent, answered. Just remember the quote from Bhaktivedanta Maharaj recently that was quoted by Nilanjan Swami. He said that we may be right, but there is a right way of being right and there is a wrong way of being right. And there are examples of how junior devotees are right and they're being right or wrong and they're being right. Just to give an example of Srila Prabhupada, when he was in a very unusual position of a junior, when he was talking to Lalita Prasad Thakur, the brother of his spiritual master.
Very nice story. Yeah.
And they were talking in Bengali, and the disciples couldn't understand what they were talking about, but they could understand that Srila Prabhupada was
shouting,
disturbed at what, yeah,
shouting, basically shouting.
And then they asked Prabhupada later what was the discussion about, and he said, well, it was offensive against my Guru Maharaj, but I wasn't
saying this, I was asking questions. There is no offense in asking questions. Is it here specifically Prabhupada was asking Lalit Prasad Prabhu, saying, is it not an offense to say like this? People in the position of leadership. You know, you can be right and you can be self-righteous. And there is a subtle, not so subtle, but distinction between being right and being self-righteous. Self-righteous means that you're always right and you try to impose your rightness, or how you say rightness, or righteousness upon others. And It's not in regard to leaders, but there is a beautiful story in Bhaktivedanta Manor. There is a very senior disciple of Srila Prabhupada, Mother Kulangana. She's 70 plus years old, or maybe almost 80. She's a wonderful devotee. She's cooking. And there is one other, you know, some other devotee there who takes her shelter. And he came once to her saying that, I'm right. Am I not right in this situation? And she looked at him very sternly and she said, Krishna doesn't mean your righteousness. Krishna needs your humility. So she just basically said to him, you may be right, but Krishna doesn't need it. You may be right in this situation, but Krishna wants to see how humble you are in this particular situation. As far as leader is concerned, I think that, you know, we should be, again, introspective. We should always consult with our superiors and the peers as far as our... and if we got the confirmation, then we should be very strong in establishing this righteousness, but at the same time very humble inside, and you know, trying to do it in a very humble way, but still very strong. So I think the key to this is the consultation or association with peers and the superiors. What shall we do? It's already 12 o'clock.
Technically, Maharaj, we go up to 12:30.
I see.
Now, of course, you are free to interrupt anytime you want, but they are all prepared to go to 12:30. I assume. Although I assume.
Don't assume anything.
Yeah, in fact, I should assume you are going to go. You are hoping to go to 1 or 2 o'clock.
Yes.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier on in your lecture that sin affects the mind and the body, but after all it affects the heart. Is that right?
Yeah.
So I wondered what the difference between the mind and the body is, because Prabhupada sometimes uses both for the same purpose.
See, basically what is the distinction between the mind and the body? Oh, that's simple.
The mind.
Huh?
The mind and the heart.
The mind and the heart, yes. That's more tricky.
You also, if I remember correctly, you said body, mind, and then you said the soul.
Yeah.
So heart, I think, is the synonym for soul, at least from what I remember from the soul.
How? What? How?
I just was saying that what I heard was that opera touches the soul and takes away. Opera touches the soul and takes away the ability to appreciate spiritual culture and activity.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas sin affects the body and mind as samskara and vasa.
Yeah. So basically, what, as far as I can understand, what it means by this is that we have this original sin, or which is aparad in our case, which is vaimukhyata, the desire to be turned away from God. The nature of I don't want to vaimukhya and sammukhya. Sammukhya, I turn back towards the Lord. I see the Lord. I'm seeing Him in front of me, and I'm serving Him. So the original problem of all living entities is this vaimukhyata, that they want to see something else. They don't want to see God. They don't want to, and but this Vaimukhyata can have different degrees, so to speak. My turning away from the Lord may be just on the level of body and mind, where I just want to enjoy without being too kind of atheistic or demonic in my nature. I don't do it at the cost of, you know, denying God's existence, denying, you know, the purity and saintliness in this world. Because some people, they become so, it's also propelled by their propensity to enjoy this world, but this propensity to enjoy this world becomes so strong that they, you know, they do it through all this sort of very offensive attitudes. Offensive attitudes towards the Lord, towards the, you know, practice, spiritual practice, and towards the devotees of the Lord. So that's what it means. And this is in the soul, as far as I know. Vaimukhyata is in the soul, it's not in the mind. It's in the soul proper. So that's what it means. You in. Okay.
What about in a situation where a leader or a devotee asks in a way to allow others to commit offenses? And the leader, or just
if you instigate or encourage
in a way to make the devotees commit offenses, and I'm aware of it.
Against you.
Against me. So they will suffer.
And you will suffer too. More than them. Because you instigated them to do it. They are just innocent victims of your of your improper attitude.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay, Madhavan. He has.
Just to continue, what Maharaj has asked about the difference between the point of application of sin and aparad. Is it correct to say that we can only commit aparad when we were given the chance, and probably use the chance to turn back to Krishna? Because if we didn't take the chance, we don't have any possibility of even offending anything related
yes.
to Krishna.
Yes.
In other words, yeah. Like it was a discussion about non-aparad, and the person, even if he's ridiculing devotees and taunting them,
yes.
even offending,
yes.
if he's not a devotee himself, he cannot
yes.
commit an aparad.
Yes.
So that would be the difference.
Yes, exactly this. It's one, if I'm just ridiculing because I think it's funny what they're doing, just chanting, dancing, you know, I really feel it's funny. That's one thing. Another thing is that I really kind of feel inside that this is something about God, and they're displaying some sort of emotions, and I, you know, start ridiculing them with this intention. So there is a distinction here too. But definitely the more we are involved in devotional service, the more glorious opportunities we have to commit aparadas. So in one sense it's a vicious circle which can only be broken if we're very serious about our practice of devotional service. Yes, the more intimately we involve, like, you know, you cannot really offend somebody if you are distant from him. But if you're close to him, you really can, you know, inflict a lot of pain to this person. And if this person happened to be the pure devotee, you know. Tukaram Prabhu and Nityananda Pran Prabhu, and then, okay.
Maharaj, I want to appreciate something and also ask you a question. You have a unique ability as a scholar. Lots of devotees are pundits, they learn Shastra, they can repeat it. And then there's devotees who are deep thinkers. It's very rare when a devotee is learning the Shastra and is also able to do the application of it.
You're talking about yourself.
I'm talking about you.
I hope.
So, And so you demonstrated, like, when you think in a 360 way about the question you're asked, you've done a number of times today. At the risk of being somewhat repetitive, I want to ask you a question very sincerely, asking you to also give me your considered opinion and to use your intelligence to apply the shastra. For leaders in general, in addition to the Trinamook Pusanijana formula that you recommended as being a panacea, in addition to keeping counsel with your seniors, which is what you recommended to Mother Mohan Guru, is there anything you would specifically say will act as some kind of a defense against aparad or some kind of a
inoculation,
maybe
injection?
Not inoculation, not looking for something so simple, but maybe something of a formula, something of a practice, some things that you've seen, some things that you practice in your own life. And if you want a case study to make it easier, advice you would have specifically for me as someone that you know who has some service that involves a little bit of leadership. So if you want to get real personal and more specific, you can please feel free to use myself as a
No, what else helps in this regard definitely is studying of the shastras, because if you study shastras properly, then you really, you know, may feel humble. You know, if you do it as a svadhyaya, if you study shastras as an act of self-analysis or self-introspection, because there is a wrong way of studying shastras, when you just try to collect or extract the beautiful points which you will use in your lectures. We all are very familiar with this sort of studying shastras. And there is another way of studying shastras when we basically, when it is said something bad, we immediately, you know, we immediately know about whom it is said, and it happened to be our enemy, usually, you know. And we just were really amazed how exactly it is described in the Shastra, and how clear-cut diagnosis is there in the Shastra about his problems. Another thing, and when it is said something good, it's obviously about, you know, myself, because, and also in a very clear way. So that's one way of studying shastras. Another way of studying shastras, if something is bad is being spoken, it's about me, and trying to see how it's applicable to me, to myself. This is interesting. This is in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 29th chapter. There is, it's 18th verse of 29th chapter, where Kapila Dev describes the sadhana or the spiritual practice which you should do to come from the devotional service in the modes of nature to the pure devotional service. He gives basically four verses where he describes the whole sadhana. And the last verse of this series, it starts in the 15th verse, 15th, 16th, 17th, and 18th. In the last verse, he starts with Adhyatmika Anushravanam. Adhyatmika Anushravanam, Namasankirtanam, Nirahankriya, and what else is there? There's some fourth thing. Adhyatmika Anushravanam, Namasankirtanam, Arya Sangamena, and Nirahan Kriya. So these four things he recommends, it's more or less a very interesting description of sadhana. And first is Adhyatmika Anushravanam, which is, from the first point of view, very easily translatable, so to speak. Adhyatmik means spiritual, Anushravanam, you continuously listen to this. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives a very interesting explanation of this point, very short but very interesting. He says that Adhyatmika Anushravanam means to hear Shastra with the specific purpose to understand which doshas and which gunas you yourself have. So not just to hear shastras, but to hear shastras to understand what are the defects and the virtues which you have. And this is what he calls adhyatmika anushravanam as a part of sadhana. You know, he doesn't, because adhyatmika anushravanam, you may have a wrong, you know, understanding that this is lila katha, you're just immersed in lila katha. Whereas it's a sadhana still, and for sadhaka, it's much more important to hear shastra with this specific purpose in mind.
He's using adhyatma not to mean.
Yeah, he's using adhyatma as a mind.
In relation to oneself.
Yeah.
As a simple reflection.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Atma is oneself,
yeah.
As opposed to atma,
yeah.
Spiritual.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
That's exactly what you're saying.
Yes.
Huh?
Other three atmas, Namasankirtanam, Chaya, and then that's very clear. And then Arya Sangamena means the association with the, you know, pure heart of people, pure devotees. And Nirihan Kriya, you have to do it in a very, without ahankar, without your false ego, without pride. So that's what he recommends. Did I answer your question?
Maharaj, that was worth the whole trip. Thank you.
Okay, Nityananda Prabhu, and I think we can finish. We'll continue in the afternoon.
Maharaj, earlier in the discussion, when Tukaram Prabhu was asking about how repetition helps not only solidify but also remove the tendency for Could you please help me understand in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is also this reference that Bahu Janma Kare Veri, from many lifetimes, one can continue their hearing and chanting, but they will not get the fruit of.
Thank you. Thank you. So again, basically it means understanding what aparada means and practicing with the conscious desire to avoid aparadas. If we do this, then this is the proper spiritual practice, and this proper spiritual practice will bring about results. It will strengthen our samukhya, or our spiritual sort of budding spiritual nature. That again is the point, that spiritual practice only becomes spiritual practice if it's not mechanical. If it's done in a certain mood, in a certain reverential mood, with Shraddha, with faith and everything else. So that's the answer to this question. If we are kind of, you know, neglect or do not want to confront with our offensive nature habitually continue our paradas, obviously Bahu Janma, you know, many lifetimes are there for us to, you know, practice in this way without any hope. So the only point is that we have to be careful. And as we know from Chaitanya Charitamrita, the defense from this is the association of devotees, because if we have close association of devotees, which is like the fence, we will be able to guard against the upashakas and aparadas without watering them. Yes, yes, Pandit Prabhupada, really sorry, you were one of the first ones. But the first ones will be...
Interesting, enlightening comparison with Pāpa and Aparāda. My question is, as a leaders, we were put into the situations, not by some of us, but we took risk, actually, when we were young. And so now we are at 50 and learning so many things here. So I started like 1991, but nobody was there to teach me anything. So then we evolved into this, and then definitely I might have done many apraths. At the same time, I might have helped many devotees to take up Krishna consciousness. So this is it's a heavy risk here. In future, after knowing all those things, calculating the risk factor, just become a bhajanandi or which is safe side?
What is your opinion on that? No, it's not that we should become Vajananandi after knowing this. This is not the point. The point is that, you know, some people, they hear this and they become scared. But the point of this descriptions is not to scare anyone off the leadership position or of devotional service. First of all, because even if you are not in a leadership position, it doesn't preclude you from committing offenses. Please don't be an illusion. So you may still continue. On the contrary, if you took responsibility, and Prabhupada was very appreciative of his leaders who would take responsibility, because he knew that, you know, taking responsibility, even if it is involved with the risk, it also involved with the greater opportunities or advantages of being purified more quickly, because you do have more opportunities to serve others, as you said. And this service is definitely something which is, and when you feel the results of your service, your attitude, your service attitude is strengthened. If you feel, you know, good that other people are getting some benefit from your preaching and association, you know, you get a lot of leaders not only have disadvantages, they have a lot of advantages too. It's just a question of not risking the disadvantages of this position, and be careful about this, and using the advantages to the fullest extent. So this is not to say this. This is just to say that we as leaders have a much more grave responsibility to, you know, to do it properly, because otherwise the opportunities or advantages to, let's say, advantages or disadvantages to commit aparadha are also greater. So we have to be careful and conscientious about this. Very clear. Yes.
I was listening to one class by Srila Prabhupada, and he, I think, pretty much starts the class by saying that this material body is anatta. So as long as you have one, then you are subject to those anattas. That was the understanding. So it doesn't matter, leader or simple devotee, whatever we want to call ourselves, if you have material bodies.
Yeah. There is a famous statement by Srila Prabhupada, and somebody came to him and said, "Srila Prabhupada, I have a problem." Srila Prabhupada looked at him and said, "You don't have a problem, you are a problem." So it's not that we have a problem, we are the problem.
Tano Manina Papinaha. In other words, someone who thinks about himself as a body, why that they think?
Yeah, Tano Manina Papinaha. This is a sinner. Yeah, this is a sinner. Okay, I guess we finish now and then we continue in the afternoon, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Presentations are 4, so you don't have to be immediately here. 4. You may even get more, depends on this announcement.
Couple of quick announcements. During this presentation, I had the realization that
if you don't put your name for the ALP presentation, either today or tomorrow, it will be an aparad. First announcement. Second announcement, the following six Prabhus can stay 1 minute more, and while everybody else can peacefully go, Vimala Krishna Prabhu, Kamala Roshan Prabhu, Patrick Prabhu, Shiva Skandi Prabhu, Jiva Katma Prabhu, and Tukaram Prabhu. If you can stay 1 minute after we take the break. So in the afternoon we'll have a few LLP presentations, and then we'll continue hearing from Bhakti Vinaya Maharaj as well.
Hare Krishna.
We start at 4 o'clock.
Получил, да, получил. Мы поговорим.
Да, спасибо вам большое. Это был очень большой опыт для меня. И в первый раз, и во второй. Насчет все-таки Каунтея Прабху и курса этого. Просто когда я приехала, Каунтея Прабху был совершенно уверен, что я здесь как наблюдатель, потому что вы хотите устроить русский бранч в GBC колледж. И я, честно говоря, эту идею я от вас не получила.
Я с ним поговорю.
Да.
Мы поговорим, и вашу роль уточним.
Да, если вы мне скажете, я
буду да. Да. Окей.